word search to that hill, see if I can find it.
I'm not sure what they get, I mean, it wouldn't be cheap.
That's funny, the House passes a bill, the Senate, and they should, House changes.
It would not be my church when I sit on the front row. I've never been up there by myself.
Next for me, I'm laid out.
I need it on, turn it off?
Yeah.
Needs to be on for your device to pick up.
If you're speaking. In other words, the recorder is just simply on the speaker, so it's gonna pick up anything.
Good evening. We have two other members who will be joining us, but they had a conflict of meetings at 7 o'clock, and so they'll be a little bit later. But we do have a quorum, and we'll go ahead and get started. We are the Zionsville Reorganization Meeting Committee, formerly known as the Communities of Zionsville Area for a Better Government. For those of you who have been to a number of the meetings, I ask you to bear some patience with me. For those that have not been here, from a background standpoint, the state legislature passed a law in 2006 that said local governments could come together and reorganize. And basically it said townships, towns, cities, counties, and so on and so forth. And it gave us, our southeast area of Boone County, the opportunity to consider that. And so in May of last year, the town of Zionsville, Eagle Township Board, and Union Township Board complied with, took advantage of the law from the standpoint that they appointed three individuals from each of those three governmental entities to serve on a reorganization study committee. We are the nine members of the reorganization study committee. Our task was to look at how our local governments were serving us, to look at how our local governments are structured, and to look at our community and try to determine whether we wanted to reorganize in some fashion and what that may look like. It was a nice opportunity for nine private citizens, taxpayers, to look at it somewhat from an academic standpoint, but then also from a practical standpoint, that how are we operating now, how might we like to operate, what changes would we like to see, and so on. We were appointed in November, and there are, as I had mentioned, there are nine of us. You'll see our names across the front of us, three from Eagle, three from Union, three from Zionsville. I am Gene Thompson. I was elected chair at the first meeting. I beat out three other candidates for it that were arm wrestling me for it. But this is our ninth meeting. We've had nine meetings, and about our second or third meeting, we said, you know, let's look at our timeline and set it, and then work diligently in order to accomplish our task during that timeline. We originally had set a goal of having our plan of reorganization done by our December meeting. At our November meeting, Alan Rachels made the very fine suggestion of, why don't we do an executive summary by our December meeting, disseminate it to the Eagle Township, Union Township, and Town of Zionsville governments and to the public, and ask for comment, concerns, discussions, and so on and so forth, and then come back together after about 60 or 90 days. That executive summary was delivered the last week in December. We asked for comments back by February 20th, which we did receive a great deal of comments and input back. and now we are digesting and discussing those comments that we received back at this meeting, and then our final meeting is 2 weeks from tonight. And 2 weeks from tonight, we will take our executive summary plus discussions that we've had here and discussions that we've had in a couple committee meetings during the past few days, consolidate and condense those down into a final plan of recommendation to be delivered to the town of Zionsville, to the Eagle Township Board and Union Township Board. For the reorganization to take place, it seems like one of the most democratic processes that's ever available. Essentially, you have 9 citizens there coming together and saying, hey, we think our government should be structured this way. And then those 3 governments that appoint us have to look at that plan and say, yes, we think that that merits consideration to move forward. And then the citizens in November have to decide, yes, we agree and embrace it, and we think you should move forward from this reorganization. So essentially, you have citizens starting with the new structure. You have the government itself deciding that they're willing and interested in looking at restructuring themselves. And then you have the citizens deciding simply whether or not it makes any sense and whether it's something that they want to see done or not. If any of the 3 governments don't pass it, governing bodies don't pass it, or any of the citizens don't pass it in November from any of the 3 governments, it can't take place. It's the 3 governments coming together, and that's essentially what it is. We're coming together. So it's a process that we've taken quite seriously and have enjoyed because it's been somewhat of a challenge. It's not been done anywhere else in the state. This is the only place it's being done. And we've enjoyed it because of the fact that sometimes we've learned more about local government than we really wanted to know because we scratched our head and said, you know, why are the budgets done this way, or why does DLGF require this or that, and so on and so forth. But it's been a very rewarding experience for me personally anyway. Our secretary is absent tonight, and so I will give you some information on our prior minutes. We have a website, which is www.ibccn.org, Indiana Boone County Community Network, ibccn.org/reorg. And on that website are all of our minutes through our December meeting, as well as an audio tape of all of our minutes. Well, I believe it's probably our September, October, November, and December meeting. The minutes for the December meeting, I believe our secretary may have at this point in time, so we'll dispense with those minutes. Our minutes for tonight's meeting, our secretary will do because this meeting as well is being recorded, and so I'll give him the recording and he can do the minutes from that recording. Okay? Any questions on where we are and or anything else at this point from anybody? Okay. What I'd like to do then is to look to, we divided into 6 different subcommittees in order to discuss some of the issues. One was governance, finance, parks and recreation, land use, health, safety, and welfare, and infrastructure. And in those 6 areas, we had 3 of the members from this body sit on each one of those committees, and then we also sought out outside individuals, and we had the school corporation participate in the area of finance, in the area of land use, and in the area of infrastructure. Eagle and Union Township have 1 school system. Eagle and Union Township are protected by the same fire services. And what we're looking at through this process is Eagle and Union Township being governed by 1 entity as well. With that, I'd like to call on committee members to give an update on their areas of topics. Anybody want to volunteer, or should I call on Steve?
Yeah, I'll start.
On safety?
My areas that I've been involved with are the public safety and welfare, which primarily for this report this evening will focus on police and fire. And then also I'll address the parks and recreation.
Thanks.
As a brief matter of background, our Public Safety Committee, which did include both representation from the police and the fire, with attendance at all of our committee meetings, we engaged in a process to look at how we could, at a minimum, maintain current services to the representatives of the community as they're now receiving them, without changing or differentiating what their expectations should be. As you all know, we ended up with a two-tiered model whereby the urban area will be supported by the Zionsville Police Department in an equal manner as to what it's now accustomed to. That also includes not only responsive policing, but proactive policing, which is something that the town marshal has made very clear as his vision and mission, and clearly his philosophy on appropriate policing for Zionsville going forward. And we support that as a committee. However, when you get into the rural territory, if you will, that area has other issues and other needs that are not necessarily equal and aligned with what we would expect as Zionsville residents. And we spent a lot of time trying to figure out what is reasonable policing for the rural market or the rural areas. And our conclusion was that the current policing that's being done by Boone County Sheriff's Department does adequately meet the needs of those residents. And anything different than that, that might include more stringent policing and even more stringent enforcement of ordinances that are within the Zionsville community, might not be well received. As a matter of fact, might actually be unfavorably received. And we were very concerned and also very receptive to the idea of having tiered services to these different geographies for that very reason. We've gotten the reports back from the town managers, and I've not had a chance to bring our committee back together, both the police and the fire, to work through the issues that were recognized at the meeting and comments and concerns and things like that. Some of that we've already read about in the newspaper, but we as a committee have not had a chance to talk through them, and we intend to next week. And so some of my report is basically just acknowledging what has been presented to the town council at a meeting a week or two ago. So this is really without work or rework on the part of the committee as to where we go based on the feedback of the town marshal and the fire chief. However, first I'd like to say that, you know, as a citizen of Zionsville, we're incredibly blessed to have our town marshal doing what he's doing, because that man is incredibly passionate about policing. And he's also very concerned about anything that might change the expectation to our community about what they're currently receiving. He's also very adamant about building a more proactive police force and what the staffing requirements for that will be. He's also very, very committed to wanting to do community-based policing, where he's involved in community education. He wants to be involved in the school system. He has gone as far as to work with the school system to have dedicated space in the high school, to have presence in the high school for education and other needs as they come up. And so clearly, from his perspectives, he wants nothing to do with the program that might change the vision that he has. Now, that said, he's also very committed to whatever direction that the community wants. He will commit to that, and he will pursue it exactly as he's asked to. And so I don't think that there will be any intentions to circumvent the direction of the community. But he has expressed concerns that going into a two-tiered model will definitely have some impact in his mind as to how we police in the future. He's expressed concerns about how each of the expectations of both the rural and the urban communities, what their expectations would be, his ability to deliver on those expectations, his intentions to continue to provide a growing police force to meet the growing community needs. And he feels that there's a potential risk that by expanding his geography over time, he will not be able to meet the growth needs of the community and still provide the level of service that he's accustomed to and that he's asking this committee to try to support in our recommendations. Again, we haven't had a chance to talk about where we go with this. He has submitted his comments. For the most part, his comments are, while he is supportive of the concept of consolidation, he truly has concerns about whether it can be effective and still keep the vision of policing the way it has been prepared and the way it's been designed so far. From the committee's perspective, we believe that with the consolidation plan that we're working on, with the lead time that is built into this model, any growth demands or changes in his resource needs, there is adequate lead time to address that. Clearly, if there were annexation, the demands on the police force might be more urgent. You would have less time to prepare for future demands. We spent quite a bit of time looking at the demands for recruitment of police force members and putting them on the streets. Clearly, the consolidation plan does allow for more adequate preparation of recruitment and training and development of officers. And he concurs with that. So there are certainly some positives that I know he has a general concern about the what-ifs of not being able to meet the service expectations. We, the committee, feel like we should be able to address these kind of concerns with the direction of what the consolidation plan is all about. Again, because we have not had a chance to talk to him, we will have to work through the comments and concerns, and we'll be better prepared to talk more about where we want to go with this from a recommendation at our next meeting.
Thank you, Steve. Any questions from the committee members on safety at this point? From the audience? See, one of the things that was raised at the special town council meeting when we were speaking to the fire chief and town marshal, specifically with relationship to the town marshal, since we are
going to be operating under an area where we're going to have rural service and town service, and the expectation is that the rural service area would be continue to be serviced by the Boone County Sheriff. There currently is no interlocal agreement that between the two organizations now, but they work well together now. Would there be a need for interlocal agreements as we move forward with a reorganization?
If you could assume that everything that's current, the way it works, the collegiality, the collaboration between the county and the town, were sustainable under any and all conditions, an interlocal agreement wouldn't necessarily get you anything more than just codifying what you're already committing to. However, we all know that as offices change, as people change, as visions change, clearly there has to be some level of documentation and codification of a commitment, an agreement, a level of service, an expectation between the town and the county. So clearly there would have to be some level of interlocal agreement or a memorandum of understanding that could withstand transition and change, and such that if in fact, you know, as officers change, as positions change, this interlocal agreement should be able to survive that up and through its termination period when it would obviously be up for renegotiation.
Yes, sir.
Have you gotten any input from the Boone County Sheriff?
Steve?
Quite a bit.
No.
We brought the sheriff into this process as well, and we've had several meetings with him and some of his first lieutenants, if you will. And their position on this is if the model changes and they're asked to do something slightly different in terms of the geography that they cover, they accept that assignment willingly and have no concerns with that. They did not feel it was absolute to have an interlocal agreement, but clearly felt it would be beneficial to have it. But again, because they feel that their relationship with Zionsville works well, the concept that we're talking about really isn't that concerning to them, because they will serve whatever area is there for them to serve. But again, because as we know, sheriffs change, positions change, there has to be something that probably could withstand those transitions. But in its current state, they would be very supportive of it.
Steve, on the fact that there's a rural area and a town area and two different law enforcement areas, are there two different sets of laws, ordinances that would be enforced in the two different areas?
Our interpretation is that the ordinances that would be enforced in the urban area would be consistent with the current ordinances. The ordinances that are enforced in the rural areas would fall under the county ordinances. And so therefore you wouldn't see a real change in the level of expectation of what people would see with this two-tiered policing model.
One of the...
Everybody is going to be subject to the same ordinances that they are today, and there will be, and you, the other thing, other reason you do that is there's no confusion to the two policing agencies as to what set of ordinances they are enforcing.
That's correct. Up till...
Simple way to do it.
But up until the point that there's a transition of someone or some area from a rural to an urban, services would change accordingly.
Okay.
We had a question?
Yes. Once this all goes into effect, what's to keep the new council from passing an ordinance that goes above and beyond what the rural ordinances are?
Well, I think that
there's probably two issues. One, whether the council passes something that they that their police department could enforce, or whether they're passing something that they're going to be asking the Boone County Sheriff's Department to enforce. You know, I think the example that Mr. Parks uses all the times is the nuisance noise of cows mooing when they want to be milked, which is something that's more of a rural issue rather than a town issue. And so that's why, you know, if you are being policed by the Boone County Sheriff's Department, I think it would be the town council, new town council, would be hard-pressed to pass an ordinance that they're expecting the Boone County Sheriff's Office to be able to be enforcing at some point in time.
They can't.
Right, that's right. As a matter of fact, they don't have their police powers. The Boone County Sheriff's Department doesn't have the police powers to enforce town ordinances.
Well, you raise a good question, though, and that's something that I think some of those details will have to be sorted out in the local agreement. I mean, you're obviously recognizing that if we do the consolidation, the areas where you live and I live are really in the town of Zionsville. So can the town council say, we're going to pass an ordinance of general application and we're not going to make a distinction on this particular ordinance for whether it applies to the town district or the rural district. We're going to say it applies to all districts, and what happens after that? If perhaps you and I would look at this and say, wait a minute, we thought those were the kinds of things you'd be passing in the town district, not out here in the rural district. And I think that's a, when we do the interlocal, or, I mean, we won't be doing the interlocal. I think we're all in agreement that if the plan goes forward, it's the responsibility of the town council to work with the folks at Boone County to put the details of these interlocals together. But some thought is going to have to be given, and it's going to have to be addressed as to what the extent of the authority and jurisdiction of the Boone County Sheriff's Department is once it crosses into, you know, the town of Zionsville, and what it can enforce and what it can't enforce, cannot enforce, and really what the expectations might be in certain circumstances of the Zionsville Police Department if they're ever out in the rural districts to be enforcing the town ordinances. Those are good questions, and I think more questions will come up as we get into the details of the interlocal, but long story short, I think about that issue a lot when we get to the interlocals and what the extent of someone's authority is as opposed to another, and the sheriff and the town police is the best example of some of the details we're going to have to work through.
And also, the thing
I'm worried about someone coming to town I've been in front of boards many times when a squeaky wheel comes up and complains, and in one quick vote, suddenly, somebody that has moved out there 6 months ago is saying, well, the town, get fire things in the town, we're really in the town, we shouldn't be able to fire things up here.
Mm-hmm.
And bing, bang, boom, and although there's a representative from Eagle, a representative from Union, still, the vast majority of people in Zionsville, proper people on board. So it could happen very rapidly without much public comment or anything else.
But wouldn't the answer to that be, I'm sorry, sir, we hear your complaint, but you live in the rural district.
And that would be the proper answer, but
that would be the answer.
Sure.
But your concern is what protects the individual from somebody at the council not choosing to override that position?
Exactly.
Well, one of the items that, when you look at the makeup of the town council, the new town council initially, you'll have the five existing ones plus two township board members on there. But in 2011, which is the year after the reorganization would go into effect, all seven members would be running, and they would be running from all new districts based upon a new census. There may only be one town council seat that doesn't have any rural component to it. All the other town council seats will probably have some rural component to it just because of how you would end up with five districts with the population dispersed the way it is and then two at-large seats. So I think that, so therefore it's not likely you're going to have a different composition in 2 years after the reorganization takes place, composition from the standpoint of who a town council member is representing, who his constituents. His constituents are going to be town service area residents and rural service residents, not just town versus rural. And this was a question that came up at the special town council meeting from the standpoint that the town department heads were concerned that residents are going to be calling them and saying, why aren't you plowing our streets, or why aren't you patrolling our streets, and so on and so forth. And the answer to them, just like the answer to the individual bringing your question up, is simply the fact that you are in the rural district, and these are the laws in the rural district, and this is the Boone County Sheriff's responsibility in that area. And until such time that the density and the contiguous nature of your neighborhood brings you into a town service district, that's what the laws are in that area.
That's fine if
the
town council
adheres to it.
Adheres to it, exactly.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
As far as having constituents in the rural area and the urban area, would you rather make the 250 rural people mad or the 2,000 urban people mad as a politician?
Okay. All right. Can we go on to our next committee report? Anybody want to volunteer at this point? Jay, appreciate it. I'm not sure whether you volunteered or not.
Well, I grabbed the mic. Planning and Land Use Committee had the pleasure of having one of the school representatives being an active member of it, with both the current chair of the APC on our committee and myself, who had spent 8 years in that role. We have some degree of knowledge about the planning process as it is done in the county, though we didn't have the same degree of expertise in how it's done in the town itself. The one thing that we did as a committee, we came forward and like Steve, we have not had a chance to meet as a committee since we've received all these, and Jim and I are getting ready to meet with the Director of Planning and Building in Zionsville sometime in the next 10 days, so we'll have a total report back for our next meeting. But we had put together three reasons why we believe that this reorganization would work right and would be the right thing for the people in this area. The first one is that it assures that the development that occurs in basically the rural areas contiguous to the urban areas, will be controlled and overseen by those that it most impacts, as opposed to being overseen or taken over by outside forces, whether they be forcibly annexed by another entity or whether it be done by another government entity further away and not fully conversant with our needs. To give you an example, on the Area Plan Commission, one of the positions is designated for a school representative. But that representative changes every 4 years among the three different school districts. And believe me, there is an entirely different perspective on what growth and development should be among those three school districts. One of which, ours, is concerned about rapid growth, the expansion of facilities to meet the needs of the expanding population, and the other two desperately looking for students. Totally different perspective, and that really comes out in the debates that we have had over the years, over that period of time, because I sat through, in effect, three school districts over that time frame, and the dialogue was totally different. So you have that type of a reason why we've decided that this is an important thing for us to take control over our area. The second thing is it does continue to build a community that is our school district boundary. And that really is important, I think, in thinking about some of the other school districts or some of the other areas where you don't have that same sense of community. That fosters a really strong sense of unity and focus and things of that nature, which makes it easy, Chip, to deal with some of the issues that you're talking about and realizing that we do have diversity, while at the same time we are called together in a variety of ways to take on a common objective or a common goal. You'll hear more about parks. I mean, the idea of having parks run by three different park boards with disparate goals and objectives is ludicrous in this small of an area when you ought to be able to come up with a common district-wide system of interconnected parks and recreation areas. The third thing is the one that probably creates the most concern and consternation on the part of Terry Jones, is the comment says that we anticipated that permit issuance and filing fees would probably offset any extra cost associated with it, and he challenged us to come up with those numbers, and we can't. It's just a feeling we had, and it's one of the things as a county, again, the Area Plan Commission is charged with being in a position where their fees, in effect, offset their operating costs. That's actually by statute. So you have those things, and like everything, the devil is in the detail. What we anticipated as a committee was that in the initial stage, we would not go through the process of coming up with a brand new comprehensive plan for the area. There's one going on right now. It's being run through the county, and there's a lot of effort going into it, and all of the effort being put into it from a standpoint of Union Township, Eagle Township, and Zionsville will all be folded into that Boone County Comprehensive Plan, and there's no reason why we can't start from that as the basis in the beginning. I was on the Area Plan Commission when, in fact, we incorporated the Zionsville Area Comprehensive Plan, which was encompassed an area larger than its current borders, into the Boone County Comprehensive Plan. So it's already there. So there is a contiguous, there is a regional comprehensive plan within the comprehensive plan. The second thing is that we didn't anticipate initially changing any of the zoning statutes for the areas that where they were operating at that point in time. Rather than going through a massive rewrite up front and try to meld the two zoning ordinances and the two subdivision control ordinances into one, why not leave them, like we're talking about with the sheriff, in a position where if you're in the rural area, you would operate under the zoning criteria and the subdivision control ordinances that related to rural. That's very important because there is a significant amount of language in the Boone County ordinances that relate to the protection of, one, ag property, and two, the agricultural land user and owner from the neighbor who complains about those noxious fumes, odors, smells, sounds, et cetera, that come from, in fact, running an agricultural operation. And that language is, permeates the zoning ordinance of the county. The third thing that was addressed is what about the membership? Well, there is a, as I think somebody will probably talk about later, we actually asked for and have been able to get an amendment to the ordinance that we've been, that we're operating under that allows us to expand beyond the state limits the number of members on both the Zoning Committee and the Zoning Appeals Boards in order to accommodate what might be a better representation of rural and urban on the Planning Commission. Our original thought was that there would be, in effect, a 9-member Zoning Commission. That's not the way the executive summary has it now because we're operating under the old statute. But the 9 members would be 4 from Eagle, 4 from Union, and 1 from the school board. Why the split that way when all, when the large percentage of the population is in Eagle? It's because the majority of the land is in Union. And especially as you look at the developable opportunities, you've got to look at the rural areas for that. And so that's why it was purposefully recommended that that be the approach taken. And right now we've got, at least it's still alive, I think, that that amendment in the legislature. So that's the third thing. We talk about the comprehensive plan, its cost, the zoning and subdivision control ordinances. And I was going to comment, Chip, to your point on the nuisance ordinances, because that seems to be a function of the plan commissions. You don't think about it, but they are, they're actually the dog bark police. And so a lot of, all of the nuisances go mostly to the planning department to enforce as opposed to the police. And so that also would fall into those ordinances that are in place when the combination takes place for the two, for the two areas. And as I said, for the other item was the financial side, and that we haven't had a chance to really talk about that. We made some recommendations based upon some early conversations as to what a planning department might look like as opposed to what it is today. But again, it depends on the economics. Today's not necessarily a good day to be talking about a lot of new subdivisions. But on the other hand, 5 years, 7 years from now, we might be. The economics will have turned around by that point in time. So I think this is all designed around the idea that we control our own destiny better by this organizational, this governance structure than we would under the one we have right now, where we really are at the risk of having territory that we consider ours being consumed by others, and where the decision process for the planning and for the development thereof will be taken away from our hands. So, and
any questions for Jay? Yes.
Did I hear you right that with this new consolidation you will adopt, I think Boone County has some zoning ordinance that Zionville doesn't, will you adopt?
What we're suggesting is that for those groups that are considered the quote urban area, which would be the current town of Zionsville, they would operate under the current zoning and subdivision control ordinances that are in force for that area. And for the areas outside of that, they would in effect adopt then the ones from Boone County that are in place now. I have done a match. In other words, I've done a crosswalk between the two. And they literally dovetail right about that level. There's only one area, and it has to do with the residential area, where there are significant differences in primarily the lot sizes, the requirements for set-offs and distances, and the densities. The county ordinances are significantly less dense than the urban ones, as you would expect. And any planning manual you look at always says that you start with the most dense around the center of the infrastructure, and as you move away, it becomes less and less dense. And that makes sense under that circumstance. So the idea would be to apply the county ordinances to the, quote, rural area, and apply the town ordinances to that which is considered urban. Does that answer your question?
Which, yeah. Jay, that means then it just would stay exactly the way it is now.
That's right. Initially, that's what it would do. And then over time, then you would start the process of merging them together. But the hardest part is going to be the subdivision control ordinances, because that's where the differences are.
So Jay, as two examples that I can think of is a farming operation or an airport operation, you know, they would continue to be governed by this county zoning and that's in place now?
That is correct. And also the overlay ordinances that may be over there, out there. For instance, the 421 overlay ordinance is available. That's in place, as is the I-65 ordinance.
Okay.
So those ordinances will also stay in place.
I mean, but when we say that it's the county's, I mean, it's the county's plan, but it would be...
It would become ours. Yeah, we would adopt that as ours, but it would be adopted for those particular geographic areas that would be...
Well, for instance, the airport's zoned airport.
That's right.
Zionsville doesn't have that, so
right.
You would adopt that.
Yeah, that's right. We would adopt it. Zionsville doesn't have any ag.
Right.
Boone County doesn't have open land. Zionsville does, crazy as it might seem.
Okay. Thank you, Jay.
Okay.
Parks and Rec, were you doing that, or was Steve, were you doing it, or Jay doing it? I mean, you're both on that.
I'm on infrastructure. I'd be glad to talk about it if I wasn't on the commission.
Sorry,
Jay.
Again, taking feedback from the Zionsville Town Council's town managers meeting that we've had recently, reviewing the manager's report from the Zionsville Parks and Recreation Department. Clearly, this is an area that only has upside potential. It's very supportive by the parks. Superintendent does not seem to acknowledge a concern with the additional work of taking on the cemetery maintenance. We're doing a little bit of due diligence as to what the real work is around the cemetery maintenance, but it doesn't seem to be too encumbering. His last statement, which I think probably reflects his opinions most, the thought has always been that Eagle and Union Township residents utilize our facilities without financially supporting them. Some form of consolidation could result in all users paying their fair share. So in summary, I think we've got the full support of the department. We are talking about the structure for the Parks Board, which under its current statutes is limited to four members plus one representative from the school board. I think we said one from the library district, which we haven't figured out if we have such a thing, but if we did, we have a representative from that.
It was the same one as the school district.
Okay. So we learned something tonight. If assuming that the pending legislation does go through and clear the legislative process, our recommendation would align with the thought that the Parks Board be expanded to include, I think, a membership of six, plus the representative of the school board. So, and that would basically incorporate, at a minimum, a member from each of the rural districts of Eagle and Union townships on the membership of the Parks Board. So I guess we're in a holding pattern until we find out the status of the legislation.
Thank you, Steve. Let me make a couple comments since there's been some allusion to new legislation.
our timeline for a reorganization, as I had indicated earlier, was that we're going to vote on a final plan 2 weeks from tonight and send it to the governing, our appointing governing bodies. The effective date of the reorganization is January of 2010. Assuming that the three governmental entities approve it, and assuming that the will of the people in November of 08 approve it, it still doesn't take effect until January of 2010. The town boundaries on December 31st, 2009 will be the boundaries that exist for the next 2 years in 2010 and 2011. So essentially what we did is we said there's going to be two different areas of service, rural and town, but whatever the town boundaries happen to be on December 31st, 2009, as the reorganization takes effect, they're going to stay the same way for 2 more years. This allows, and the primary reasoning for this, first of all, is because in this reorganization we're trying to give citizens a clear path of what their future is looking like before it jumps up and scares them. Essentially, what they'll have is they'll have the opportunity to see growth coming, what direction it's coming from. It's going to be quite obvious that if it's contiguous, it's coming from this southeast point rather than from the east or the west or the north or some other direction that surprises them or from behind them, you know. It also, this two-year period allows the town department heads and the town management and the new town council the time to digest their responsibility and to determine their responsibility and how best to meet it. Plus, it allows them to establish budgets and staffing requirements that they would need as their territory may expand in 2012. The other thing that it allows is it allows in 2011, the next election, for citizens to be able to vote for 7 town council members to sit on that new town council, the new fully elected town council in 2012. The legislation that has been referred to is a piece of legislation in the current session that Senator Drozda was put forward for us, and it was an outcome of the fact that under the current legislation we're operating under, it says that the reorganized government can establish and do these different things. But there was concern raised by one of our members who's quite knowledgeable in this area that the first time that a developer gets a subdivision voted down, there's going to be a legal challenge to whether we have the specific authority to have the composition of our planning and zoning and or parks board to be what we come up with. Because of the fact that our planning and our vision for planning and zoning and parks board may have a different composition than every single other one in the state. And so a developer coming in gets a subdivision voted down, the first thing he may do is challenge the authority of the composition of our planning and zoning boards. And so we went for additional legislation to try to clarify how much flexibility we have in structuring those boards. And whether, if this legislation doesn't pass, in our final plan, we will still verbalize our preferences to the compositions of those boards because of the fact that then it will become, when those boards are established, how clear and how defined and how far out they want to step to making the boards like we visualize them or only going so far as the law specifically says it, that law specifically says at that point in time, or whether if the citizens approve the reorganization, there may be legislation in the 2010 session that gives more clarity as to the structure of the planning and zoning and parks boards. Okay. Another report. Finance?
Yeah. Well, I need that.
Yes, you do. Please. It's the only way I'll get recorded.
The Finance Committee met last night, and what we basically did was to review all of the written comments and verbal comments that we had received relative to the plan, to the executive summary. And we picked out from all of those comments those that had some connection with finance. Many of them were questions, so I'll share the answers to those questions with everyone here. The first was with respect to how is the COET distributed and will the, that's county option income tax, and will the consolidation in any way change the distribution of COET? And the answer is the consolidate, nothing that about the consolidation will change the amount of money. There's a lot of factors outside of our control that could do it, but the consolidation won't. And the reason for that is that COET is basically distributed on the basis of budgets. So to use a simple example, if your budgets total 1% of the total of all the local governments in the state, you're going to get 1% of the COET. And that's a simple way to do it. In the county, I'm sorry, in the county. So, it's now, other if budgets change relative to one another, obviously, outside of your control, that can change. But the dollars that we'll be spending in the first couple of years are virtually identical, a little bit down. So the COET money will not be affected. Okay, that's number one. The second one was, okay, there's a lot of proposed legislation out there. The governor has introduced this 1-2-3 plan. And will that in any way negate the need to have two different taxing districts? The reason we've proposed two taxing districts is the only way we could figure out to make this thing work from a financial standpoint is to have two levels of service. That's the only way to control the costs. That's the only way to be fair to the taxpayers. And so that's what's driving it. It's not the law that's in effect. What's driving the two tax rates is that we're going to have two tiers of service. So the answer to that. The other issue that we looked at last night was not financial in nature, but we were originally charged with responsibility for developing the definition of town and rural and recommending it to this group. And there were a lot of questions concerning the one item that we had in there that said the town council will have the ability to waive the contiguous requirement. For a lot of people who, there was a lot of concern expressed about that. So we felt the easiest way to handle that concern and to make that go away is just to get rid of that language. It was originally put in there under the thought, with the thought, that there could be a large development occur in Union Township that might not be contiguous in the short term. It would reach all the others. And why not give the benefit of that, because that would look pretty much like a town, why not give the benefit of that to the town? But if you think about it, development's going to follow pipes, and so if we put pipes up there, it's going to be contiguous, so it's probably a moot point. So we recommend striking that one paragraph. And then the other, which is just a clarification, as we read through several of the comments, it sounded as though there might be some confusion as to whether new developments or existing developments which became contiguous, or would they come into the town, or is that subject to a decision? And the answer to that, so we're just clarifying this, as when we originally proposed that, it says they come in. So if you are a new development served by water and sewer and contiguous, come into the town. If you are an existing development served by water and sewer, and you're contiguous, and there are several of those now, you would come in 2 years after the date you would come in. So just to clarify that's the mechanism. Once you meet that definition, you become part of the town. And those are the issues that we talked about. I'll take any questions or comments that people might have.
What's the plan for Royal Run and the Anthony development? Is that going to be with those?
all of the Anson is in the town of Whitestown, so it's that, whether we'd like to have it or not is a moot point. It's just, that's, and Royal Run will be a part of this, and frankly, I don't know whether there is a contiguous route to Royal Run or not. It's not contiguous at this point.
It is contiguous from the backside, but not from the roadside.
Nope.
But, so it is contiguous, significantly contiguous on the backside to the rest of Eagle Township, to Old Outlaw Hunt Club.
So that...
Royal Run would be considered like any other area of Eagle Township that is not within the incorporated area of Whitestown.
So it would become.
Make sure I understand. So we're saying it's rural.
It's rural.
And until there's...
Yes.
It would be rural until it becomes contiguous, and then it would become part of the town.
Recognizing that it's sewer is not...
The definition is served by water and sewer regardless of source.
I understand.
Okay. So we have actually three currently serving. We have three sewer districts currently serving our area.
Right.
Clay Waste, Town of Zionsville, and Whitestown.
Acting back here. Thank you, Joe. Let me comment on a couple of finance questions that were raised. One at the Village Resident Association meeting that I made a presentation at, and also at the Eagle Township Board meeting, and it relates to debt. There's a provision in the executive summary that refers to the debt and how the debt is, what the debt numbers are, and how it is to the obligation to retire existing financial obligations. The clarification on that is twofold. One is the debt does not include any TIF debt. In other words, tax incremental financing debt, because that debt, those bonds are issued and pledged for by the property taxes on those properties that are in the TIF district. It doesn't, they don't affect and aren't counted in the finances and budgets and stuff of the town. The clarification in our, on page 4 of our executive summary, we had numbers down for Eagle Township, Union Township, and the town of Zionsville. And they were rounded numbers, and there wasn't a lot of precision given to them because those are the numbers that we started discussing back in June, and they were put in the executive summary. Since then, as a result of a question raised by the Eagle Township Board, the fact that Eagle Township does not have any debt that is outside of a TIF district. The Union Township has some debt relating to the construction of a new fire station. And the town of Zionsville has some debt. The debt is defined as of December 31st, 2009. So whatever the debt is on December 31st, 2009, before the reorganization, will remain the debt of that local government and will be retired as it is scheduled by the citizens of that local government. I had several questions asked. Some individuals were thinking that that debt had to be retired by December 31st, 2009 before the reorganization could take place, but that is not the case. And we also have a schedule now from Umbaugh & Associates on the town of Zionsville debt that shows that on December 31st, 2009, the town of Zionsville debt should be $12,130,000. Okay. So the numbers will be updated in our reorganization plan, but they'll also be specified that it's whatever the debt is as of December 31st, 2009. Okay. Yes, John?
Just mechanically, if we do this and we have this sort of hodgepodge of Union Township that is merged into now the town of Zionsville, but the Union Township residents have their debt for the fire station. And then we've got Eagle Township, and then we've got Eagle Township in Whitestown, and all these different different, I don't know how many combinations. This will all churn through the county auditor treasurer's office and come out somehow.
Right, just like right now. You sound so confident in that process, you know. I mean, yeah, it's like making sausage that they do down. I mean, right now, you have the exact same situation occurring. You have a Zionsville tax rate, you have an Eagle Township tax rate, you have a Union Township tax rate, and for those residents in Eagle Township outside of the town of Zionsville, you have a city tax on there now. That is your fire territory. So, you know, there's different places on the tax bill that they put things and identify it as a city tax, but it's really, on my tax bill, it's a fire territory tax, okay? Now, under a consolidated reorganization situation, I don't have a city tax or a fire territory tax because a fire territory tax would be included in the base rate of the new town Zionsville tax, okay? So there are some mechanics, but yes, essentially what you could look at is you could look at it from the standpoint that there'll be one all-inclusive tax rate and then credits back off of it based upon whether you're in the rural service or the town service, and then additions back on it whether you're responsible for the Union Township original debt or the Zionsville original debt.
One of the issues we had raised earlier, I don't think it's been resolved, is the debt that is backed by an asset such as a building. Building or the asset is transferred to Zionsville, but the debt stays with the entity. We were concerned whether there could be some disproportionate debt that's not backed by the asset, and I don't think that we have the privilege of keeping the asset or transferring the debt with the asset under the reorganization.
The statute's very clear, and the statute says one entity may not transfer pension service liability or debt to another entity, period.
But you can't transfer the asset.
But you can consolidate the assets, the services, and so on and so forth. Very simply, I mean, you can identify assets as being this building or those police cars, but you have to also identify assets as being the land in Union Township or the land in Eagle Township. And so, I mean, you'd just be, you know, you'd be chasing your tail a little bit trying to track all that. And the whole point of a reorganization is the fact that you're becoming one community. You know, I think I used the example in, at one time that, you know, when you get married, you know, my wife didn't necessarily ask me what my school loans were still outstanding, and I didn't necessarily volunteer how much I still owed on her ring. So, but it's worked out for 35 years. So, I mean, you know, there's some questions you can't answer because you're going into it, and it's a transition situation, and you're going to be together the rest of your life. So, yes?
Under finance, it says that there are tools to control the costs, you know, such as local planning and land use. How
does that control the cost? I mean, can you elaborate on that?
Sure.
I'll take that. Do you control both the cost and the revenue? Obviously, when you, depending on what you build, whether you build a commercial or whether you build a highly dense set of apartments or whether you build a rural area, not so dense rural area, you're going to control policing costs, road costs, all of those things. So you depending on the value of the structures that you put in there, the assessed value, the what's the other word? I'm looking. I'm blank here for a second. I apologize for that. At any rate, you've obviously, whatever you do from a planning standpoint, whatever you allow to be built determines both a cost and a revenue to a unit. I mean, it's really that simple. Or here's probably the best example. Right. If you build a highly dense lower cost area, you're probably going to have a lot more students, which ends up being an expensive. I mean, you are going to have that as opposed to a business. You're going to have more students, so you're going to drive your school costs. So it just That's just an example. I'm not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent, but it just happens to be an easy example to give. Does that make sense?
Anything else?
Yes, Jay.
One more.
Joe knows this, and so do some of the others, but there have been a number of studies that have been made, and it's interesting, it doesn't make any difference where they, studies are, except for some of the high rent districts like Southern California or Boston. But there is a rule of thumb that says there is a set amount, if you are building a housing development, to cover the costs of the infrastructure for that house, for a house, it has to have a certain assessed value, assuming that there is no commercial. So, to Joe's point, you can control a lot of your costs by what it is you plan to develop in an area, commercial, business, industrial, versus residential, and also the density of that residential. Way back when I was on the APC, that number was around 275, and inflation has probably bumped that up now to over 300. But I know in working with the APC during those years, we were very cognizant of the fact that we were developing, or had developers come forward with subdivisions, we were very serious about watching that number in concert with a mix of commercial versus residential. If somebody came in with a large number of lower priced houses, there had to be a concurrent amount of commercial that went in there in order to support the gap between the taxes that would be generated from those houses and the cost of supporting that house. And so that's one of the things. When you talk about managing your own destiny, that's a big part of it. You cannot build this area as totally residential and not price all of us out of a house. I mean, that's just impossible to do. So there has to be a mix of commercial, industrial, and business along with residential in that process. The speed at which you approve development also dictates your school costs, because that determines how fast you have to build ahead of your student bodies, which we've done a very good job of here. And so that's a part of the process, too. So when you take a look at how you manage both the input and the output. Everybody, it's been described that the difference between a rural police force and an urban police force is the difference between response and patrol. In the rural area, they're more focused on responding. And in an urban area, they're more focused on patrolling. Patrolling costs. What kind of services do you want? What kind of services do the governing officials decide that they want and put in place? That also generates the revenue. That talks about the cost that has to be supported by the revenue that comes from the taxing sources. So these are the kinds of decisions that an expanded area would have to deal with and have to look at and have to balance. And that's all part of the process. But it's more effective to do it in the construct of a larger area, even if you do have these, in effect, two competing types of districts.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, the infrastructure report. Jim?
The infrastructure committee really addressed two areas. That would be the street department and the wastewater department. The report that we forwarded that concerned the street department sparked a considerable number of questions that we have gone through and found answers for. But in doing so, one of the things that we determined is maybe that we were making it more complicated than what it needed to be, in that we were looking, going to take the road inventory for the portions of Eagle and Union Township that were not incorporated and transfer those to the town then the town would collect local road and street money on those inventories, and then negotiate an interlocal agreement back with the county to do the maintenance and upkeep on those roads, which would include plowing snow, grading, and all those sorts of activities. In researching these questions that were raised, one of the things that we will go back and consider as a committee is maybe leaving the inventory in the county. The portion that is designated as town would come over and go through the transition process to convert that to local road and street. However, the portion that is going to be considered rural and is currently serviced by the county would stay in the county inventory. The county would collect the monies for maintenance on those roads as they do now, so there would be no interruption in cash flow to either the town or the county for providing the service. We have not thoroughly debated this alternative, but it seems to be a much simpler way of approaching the problem than as areas would transfer in the future from rural to town. Then we would update the inventories and transfer those assets over. This has not been reviewed or submitted to either the town council or the county commissioners, so it has not been vetted, but that's our thinking at this point.
In other words, you would not be doing a transfer until you're actually moving an area from the rural service district into the town service district, transferring the road mileage at that point in time, at which point in time the town street department would be taking over full responsibility for it.
That's correct.
I think either alternative is going to suggest what the committee suggested from the get-go, is that there's going to have to be an interlocal agreement worked out in whatever format this is going to be put into between the municipality and the county commissioners and their highway department. So that hasn't changed. The question is, this is another alternative or another potential option on how you might be able to provide rural versus urban services. What has not been vetted out at this particular point is the legalities of if these roads are part of the Zionsville road system, whether they can be kept as part of the county road systems as opposed to part of Zionsville's road system.
Whether the law actually recognizes whether there's two service
districts. And it very well may be the state will recognize whatever is sent to them in terms of who has jurisdiction. And that's probably what the circumstance will be, is that whatever you tell the state in terms of what's in and what's out, they act on that. They don't come up and second guess and check the road mileage or the lineal footage themselves. So I think there's a possibility of having that done. I don't think we've really thought about it too greatly, but it appears, at least in Jim's discussions with the highway department, that they would certainly be amenable to such an arrangement. Again, all these suggestions are to offer alternatives, but really the heavy lifting is going to have to be done between the municipality and the county in terms of which option they're going to take, if this is another option, and how that's going to be determined in terms of any written contracts or agreements. Alan, I know you had a look on your face.
Well,
can we do this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know either. But if I understand you right, what you would be envisioning is still an interlocal agreement.
Yes.
But you're simply agreeing that from day one, we're going to report to the state that these roads are in Zionsville's inventory and these are in the county's. So the money would still flow directly to the county for the areas out in Union.
Right.
Instead of passing through Union or Zionsville to be paid back to the county.
And conceptually, I don't think it makes any difference to the state. If the money flows based upon their predetermined formulas to the entity that's actually going to provide the service, that's probably all they care about, whether it's in or out.
Right.
So I think Jim hit on a pretty good alternative. Jim has been working on that. hit on an alternative that might be a workable alternative to ease some of the concerns as it relates to roads, or how are we going to do this? How's this going to manage itself? Because of the different funding formulas and the fact that they're based on linear footage versus population, the concern was Zionsville might be able to come up short because there's less population out in the rural area, but a lot more linear footage of road. And therefore, the funding formula might cause them to come up a little short as it relates to providing services out in that area, or collecting for services out in that area. So I mean, Jim has been working on this, and I think came up with an alternative that has some legs to it that we might be able to offer the legislative bodies.
Thank you, Mike. Yes, question?
Even if you agree on the who has the inventory and which roads and how the revenue that's generated is supposed to be allocated, how do you address the realistic aspect, though, that under a transitional time frame where the county may have responsibility for certain roads, but if they know because of a subdivision or annexations and something's going to revert into the town, how do you ensure equity relative to maintenance such that because of the priorities the county doesn't say, well, that's going to go to Zionsville within the next year or two anyway, so we're not going to resurface it. We're going to do the county roads that need it.
Well, I mean, that's a fair question, but that question exists today, whether there's a reorganization going on or not. And, you know, there's an annexation by the town of Zionsville out on Club Road right now. You know, the question is, would the county highway department be not plowing Hunt Club Road because they think it's going to be part of the town soon, or patching it or something like that? And so I think that's not much different than the existing situation now, because, you know, what we're doing in a reorganization fashion isn't going to, I don't believe, is going to create any more growth in subdivisions. It's simply going to maybe bring a little bit more order to the process, or a little bit more forward vision to the process, so that people will see it coming.
That is the argument for the, behind the original idea of bringing the money in here and then dispersing it on a subcontract basis.
Is there anything on sewers that you...
And that still is an option that's on the table. It may be the legislative bodies will pick option A, or potentially option B makes a little bit more sense to them in the long run. I think we're in a position where we'll be able to give them alternatives, but ultimately they're going to have to negotiate those contractual agreements between the legislative bodies, the county and the town, to make sure it's a workable arrangement and it works for both sides. I think from the highway department standpoint, if they collect the monies, they'll provide the services. If they don't collect the money, somebody else ought to provide the services or pay them to provide the services. So it's probably six of one, half the other. If they don't have any more miles they have to maintain, as long as they're not being paid for it, they don't care. Somebody else will do it. Or if they're going to be paid to do it, they'll maintain it. Or if they'll keep it and collect the money and maintain it. It sounds like all of those options are on the table as far as the county's concerned. The municipality just has to kind of work an agreement up, work some models up to make sure they're understandable and they work, and then put something in writing so that they've got an agreement with the county on how it's going to operate.
Thank you, Mike.
For the wastewater department, we went through great effort in our report to try to describe ways that the rural areas could be provided sewer service if the town elected to do so. And in the street department, the wastewater department, as well as the planning department, it gave them great angst for us to make those recommendations. It's going to be our recommendation to the overall committee that we remove the recommendations that we made from the report, and basically probably leave it very similar to what is in the executive summary, in that the rural areas are becoming part of the planning area for the town and needs to be treated as such. And then it will be up to the town to determine if and when and how sewer service is provided to those areas.
Okay. Thank you. Governance report, please.
Thank you. Well, I brought a guest I'd like to introduce. How's that for a change of pace? Yeah, show and tell. As you all know, earlier in this process, we discussed and decided to hire some professional help as we really moved into this phase of the project and putting the final plan of reorganization together. Mike Clater from Crow is with us this evening, and Mike was a tremendous help even as we worked on the executive summary, especially when it came in to trying to get maps that were easy for people to understand and tried to explain some of the concepts we were talking about. So I've asked Mike to join us this evening, and he was able to do so. And Mike, if you wouldn't mind just standing up and introducing yourself and maybe giving the rest of the committee a little bit of your background, I think it would be appreciated.
Sure, absolutely. As Alan said, my name is Mike Clater with Crow Chiswick. Probably ought to get all my conflicts of interest out on the table before I tell you a little bit about myself. First, my retired partner, Alan Rachel's over here, who I don't actually let retire. I call on him a lot for his advice, but he thinks he's retired, so he can be on your committee, that's fine. My other not really conflict is along with my buddy Eric Hand here. We serve on the Clay Waste Board. So we are a service provider and own a little sewer utility that's within your purview as well. So that there's my conflicts to get out on the table. As far as myself, I spent 15 years with the State Board of Accounts before I joined Crow Chiswick. So I had a lot of work with various types of units of government and have primarily been a governmental consultant with Crow Chiswick and have quite a passion for governmental reorganization. In 1999, we were hired to do a study called the Compete Study, which was commissioned by a consortium of chambers of commerce around the state. We did a study statewide of how government should be modernized, what kinds of changes should be put together at the county level, at the city level, township level. That was presented to the legislature, and they did absolutely nothing with it. Quite a shock, I'm sure. And then in 2004, the Indiana Chamber asked us to update that study. And we did go through some things, talking about township government, talking about some parts of city and county government and the way those were organized. And as you might expect, the legislature did nothing with that again. However, I'm very excited in the fact that the legislature in 06 did the modernization statute. We have talked with people around the state, and you guys are out there. There's a small group doing some talking in Vandenberg County. There's a group doing some talking in Johnson County. But as far as I have seen, you're the only group that's actually doing something. So we're excited to assist in the process. You know, put together some things on the election districts and just some talking around about some of the governance processes. But glad we can be part of this, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thanks for being here, Mike.
Been on high tech.
Yeah. So we're either a pioneer or a guinea pig. And I guess time will tell.
Yeah, when will we know that?
Somewhere down the road.
It's whether you get shot or not.
Well, from the governance committee's perspective, I think the concept of putting the executive summary out there, and I think Alan Rachels gets the credit for that, has really turned out to be a remarkable idea, because I really can't imagine where we'd be at if what we had distributed from day one was what we thought was our final piece of work product, because the feedback we received from the different legislative bodies and the citizens of these three units has been very helpful and very crystallizing. Probably the most encouraging thing from the governance perspective Governance Committee's perspective is that the response or the reaction we felt we received to the town council component of the plan. We had recommended, as you recall, going from 5 to 7 members and having our Union Township trustee and our Eagle Township trustee slide in as council members 6 and 7 until the next regularly scheduled election would take place. And I've tried to keep an open ear at the different meetings I've been to and getting feedback from our committee members. And as best I can tell, there's uniform support, I guess would be the best way to put it, for that concept. probably the issue that is of greatest concern to the Governance Committee and one we're going to work to address is what you've heard discussed here tonight, and it's the representation issue. I think for the plan to be palatable in Union Township and the rural parts of Eagle Township, we have to make sure that people are going to feel like they're adequately represented, not just on the town council, but on these different boards and commissions. The ones we've discussed tonight are the Parks Board, the Plan Commission, and the Board of Zoning Appeals. I do feel, and I think I speak for the Governance Committee, that based on current law, we have some restrictions about being able to ensure people that there will be someone from Union or someone from Eagle on the Parks Board, or there will necessarily be someone from Union or someone from Eagle on the Plan Commission or the Board of Zoning Appeals. And that's simply because of the statutory scheme we're working with. Zionsville's a town today. After this plan of reorganization, if it's approved, it will still be a town. And the Indiana Code specifies how many Parks Board members can be on a town Parks Board. And it's 4, with the addition of 2 ex officio non-voting members. And what we've studied and what we've looked at is whether we can look at the requirements of the Indiana Code, where it says 4 members, and in the parks, and specifically, the only qualifications are that they be a person with interest or knowledge of parks and recreation. That's the only statutory requirement to be a member of a town parks board. And we've looked at and tried to study whether we can add additional requirements about geography and make them part of this plan. And long and short of it was we concluded that, you know, we can't add additional requirements above and beyond what already exists in the code. And the same situation was true in the situation with the Plan Commission, and the same situation was true in the situation of the BZA, even though I think there was probably a strong sense of agreement that that would be a good way to go and good information or a good recommendation to put in this, that there be a geographic balance, as Jay mentioned earlier. I don't know what will happen with this bill that was introduced in the Senate, if it will go somewhere, if it won't. If it does, I think what we're going to try and do is essentially put an either-or in here. If the law remains as it is, this will be our recommendation. If there are changes made that allow us greater flexibility, and that's what that statute, the proposed amendment in Senate Bill 297 was designed to do, was to give this committee more flexibility and more authority in putting forth recommendations as to the makeup of these bodies. But I think we can address it either or. I think the other primary concern of the Governance Committee will be to make sure that, you know, we study all these different issues we've heard from the subcommittees and the concept of these interlocal agreements, and make sure we're putting a plan of reorganization in front of these legislative bodies and the voters that, as best as we can, we make sure we're putting something out there that won't be subject to a legal challenge somewhere down the road, whether it's 5 or 10 years, whether it concerns how the Plan Commission is comprised, or whether it concerns whether the Boone County Sheriff has the authority to issue a speeding ticket on 200 South. when it's now part of the town of Zionsville. We want to make sure as best we can, we think through all those issues right now so that somebody's not putting time, energy, and effort into it somewhere down the road. But we look forward, especially in working with Mike, to putting together a more comprehensive plan for the legislative bodies to review and the voters to vote on. I think if there's probably been one area where it's generated the most discussion, it is probably finance. The sense I get is that, you know, when people open up the final version of our plan, they're going to want to know, to the extent we can, what's really going to happen with my taxes. And I know that's a challenge, and in many instances, those are questions we can't answer. We're not the town council, and the town council will be making the most of the decisions that are going to impact people's taxes. But that's the kind of information I hear from people saying they wish they could see more of. That's all I have.
Thank you, Alan. I have a question for Mike. The town council districts that you've drawn, if were based on 2000 census, and will new census numbers be available to draw new districts for the 2011 election?
Absolutely. The process is census will gather the data in 09. That's really why you're prevented from changing the unit of government in 09, because they tie those figures to units of government by census tract. So in 2010, they will release the numbers. You'll do your redistricting, and then the election in 11 will be based on your new districts. So these districts aren't going to last very long, but that would happen in any decennial census. You would have new redistricting for any.
So as of right now, the districts that you're proposing, as an example, doesn't really take into account the population of Cobblestone Lakes, because Cobblestone Lakes or the Enclave or any number of others, Stonegate, I mean, they weren't there in 2000, so they're not in those census numbers that the districts are drawn on, but they will be when the citizens are being asked to vote for the new 7-member town council in 2011.
You know, the alternative is to do a special census, and quite frankly, it's not worth the great cost to do that because you're so close to a regular decennial census.
Thank you. Question on the question?
Certainly.
Mike, let's assume for sake of argument that the plan of reorganization goes through and it's approved, and we all recognize that what we put in our executive summary was old and it was dated. So come 2010, when this information's available, I take it it's the then existing Zionsville Town Council who will really have the authority and be charged with the task of redrawing these lines that you've tried to do for us in this example.
That's correct.
Okay.
But the lines are drawn based upon the federal census tracts.
Based on the tracts and based on the population as it was in 2000.
Yeah, my point is
this won't exist. This will never be used.
This won't exist, and it would certainly, I guess, would be within the authority of the town council to move borders, move lines, if in a manner they saw fit, as long as they complied with all the legal requirements.
Exactly.
Okay. Does it make sense to use that in the final report if we know that it's obsolete before the plan goes into effect?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, Steve, and we knew that when we put it in here, and we largely put it in just so people would have an idea of how it would work. But that's certainly a good question for us to discuss before we finalize.
Mm-hmm. Alan, what is the timeline? You know, our immediate timeline is for any other committee reports to be, or committee meetings and reports to be completed within about 10 days from now, shared
amongst ourselves and with Alan at our meeting in 2 weeks from now to discuss those, to see if there's any other changes that need to be incorporated and updated into the executive summary. To take a vote in 2 weeks from now as to whether that is our plan of reorganization, or to authorize the governance committee to write our plan of reorganization as encompassing any changes we may make on March 12th. Then what becomes the timeline at that point, after March 12th, timeline as far as writing the plan and delivering it to the governmental units, and what are they supposed to do with it then?
Well, I guess the first, depending on the amount of change and the detail of the reports I see, that'll probably dictate to some degree, you know, from our next meeting in 2 weeks, how long it takes the governance committee with Mike's assistance for us to put a draft of the final plan together such that we can reconvene and give everyone a chance to look at it and comment and edit, because we do want that feedback from everybody. My guess is we're probably looking at a window of 20 to 30 days there to get it all compiled.
Okay.
And reconvene.
So you're looking at April 15th, mm-hmm. at the latest, mm-hmm. hopefully?
Mike, does that sound like a reasonable...
April 15th is a terrible day for...
I couldn't agree with you more.
Why is that? What's wrong with April 15th?
Maybe it's not bad for everyone.
March 15th is fine with me.
Under that scenario, I mean, what we'd try and envision doing is having a draft of the plan to be circulated in advance of that, so people have had a chance to review it before we come in that night.
It would be good then to be able to do that, and then if we get that done, at least get the formal plan finally approved in April, and then perhaps have a formal presentation of it with some of the highlights of the town council meeting in May, or simply present it at that particular point in the town council. The other legislative bodies will kind of take it from that point forward, but certainly the town council meets that first week in May, first Monday in May.
Do we, let's do this. Each of the committee members, if you would, as you reflect on your committee, subcommittee work you need to do, you would send me an email as to how much time you need to complete that work before our next meeting, so that if we're, I mean, you may look at what work you're going to be doing and say, gee, I need to change this and this and address this, and I'm done, I think, pretty much. And so that, you know, maybe we're allowing a lot of time for committee, right? We have 2 weeks before our next meeting, and I'm more than happy for us to take 2 weeks if our subcommittees need that time to work on it. But if our subcommittees, I think safety is meeting Tuesday next week.
Yeah.
And if we meet Tuesday next week and are done on Wednesday, then we're done on Wednesday. We don't need, and we can send that to the governance committee for their digestion and perhaps including in a summary for our next meeting. Mm-hmm. So let's look at the timeline that you need for your subcommittee and try to address it back to me, and we'll work on putting, I'll work with governance on putting a timeline together. There is one issue, too. I believe that our authority as a committee, we were appointed in May, and I believe there was a 1-year timeline on the authority of our committee. So I'd like to get it to the governing bodies with us still having 30 or 45 days left in case there's something else we have to come back in and address.
It was 1 year from the date that the resolution was passed by the last of the three bodies, and I can't tell you off the top of my head which one that was.
It was in May.
Zionsville was the last of the three.
There was an including Union Township in it, and I have it, but it's in May.
That sounds right.
I'm pretty sure it's in May.
Gene, I don't think we answered Steve's question about including the map in. I think maybe for a couple of reasons it would be worthwhile to include the map. Kevin and I first met with Ed, who had drawn the maps previously. I think we were astonished to find out how difficult it was and what a job they had to do it. And in the governance committee as we were educated by Mike as to all the nuances and things we had to do to avoid lawsuits and make sure that we were doing the right thing. I think the map shows a couple of things. First of all, if you look at the population of the different districts, they're all within 200 or 300 population of each other, and that's something that we're going to have to, so I think it educates people as to how these districts come about. I also think that even with the addition of some of the growth we've had, a couple of subdivisions, I don't believe the maps are going to change that much. I think the districts are still going to look a lot like they are. So I wouldn't have any problem about leaving it in, and because it does give people an opportunity, if they're interested, to see what the parameters are for doing this, and it's not just, you know, throwing darts at a board to get this done, because he's certainly not doing that.
Okay. Yes, Jay? I, too, one. One, a comment on that. Remember that the recommendation that we have is that it be 5 districts and 2 at large, so that you know that you're voting for not only your own individual person, but also there are 2 at-large people that serve the entire area as a whole. The second thing is a question for the governance committee as we get ready for the final report, and it's been kind of an undercurrent of some of the questions that have come from the audience itself, and that is this. We talk about the transition, future transition, every 2 years, redrawing the map between urban and rural. The big issue is, what are going to be the criteria, and what's going to be the process of involving those people involved? Because I know in talking with some of the people up in our area in Union, that is probably the major disquiet about the whole process, is that uncertainty as to that process.
Well, let me ask this question. Is the process of moving from a rural to a town service district, is that a process that you would envision going before a planning commission or a zoning commission, just like a new subdivision would be required to do so, and having some review at that level?
I've got some thoughts, but I'm at this point in time, I was just tossing it out saying, okay, I think it probably ends up as a governance issue as opposed to a planning issue. Because
meaning town council
decision. Yeah, it's meaning town council. It's the underlying comment, or it underlies, it's the foundation of Chip's comments earlier about his concerns about the ability of the town council to look beyond the passion of the person in front and things of that nature. But that, to me, I think is the one element that I see in this entire process that is probably the most disconcerting as I look at my neighbors in Union Township.
Okay, I guess I'm having a hard time understanding why there would be any confusion. There is a definition, and the definition is if you are in an area that is, if you are contiguous, if you have water and sewer, then you will become a part of the town.
Service area.
Yeah, and the 2 years is just a planning period.
Okay.
But there's no separate decision that says, well, we're going to, okay, subdivision A comes in, subdivision B doesn't come in. If they meet the definition, they both come in.
And there's not a monster.
No, I mean, I don't understand,
Joe,
where you're at.
For example, Wolf Run and Timberwolf, the Sanders property, whatever they decide to do with that, say that gets developed. Now you've got 2 housing additions kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and you run pipes up the road. Well, you run pipes past your place and my place and everybody in between. And at some point, between point A and point Z, we're contiguous. I mean, you know, the rural district runs into the urban district somewhere. So would the town be able to say, look, we ran sewer all the way up to these two housing additions because we felt they needed sewer? They are contiguous. If you bring it all the way down to 300 South or wherever the town limit is at the time, we're going to not annex, transfer that district all the way up to those housing districts, which brings me in.
Are you served by sewer and water?
Well, the pipe would go right up past my house.
Are you served by sewer and water?
Do I have to be?
I'm just saying.
If they bring, and I don't fully understand the Barrett law, if they bring sewer up past my house to get to that housing addition, do I have to hook up with that sewer?
Historically, at least when I say historically, I'm talking about the 33 years that I've practiced here, nobody has required people to hook on to sanitary sewer by any municipality unless there's been a septic failure that provides that the only way to be able to go ahead and provide appropriate septic services to be on sanitary sources. So I guess the practical answer to that question is, I doubt that anybody will require somebody to hook up to a sanitary sewer service just so they can be taxed in the urban versus rural area if they have a functioning sanitary sewer system. That has never been done by our county. I don't know that there's any indication that it would be done. I guess conceivably under the sewer extension law, if it runs within 300 feet of your house, I guess they could require it. It's just never been, it's just never happened. If you've got a functioning septic system and it's working fine, nobody has a problem. If you're in denial about whether your septic system's causing environmental problems, and there's a sewer that runs by your house, the municipality ought to have the right to tell you to hook on and pay the appropriate cost. But other than those two instances, it just doesn't happen. Nobody, if you got a functioning septic system, I don't think you should be required to hook on if your system's working.
But I guess what I'm saying is, if you want to bring those two housing conditions into the town, into urban
town services,
and you're creating a corridor up to it to accomplish contiguousness.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I don't hook up to the sewer doesn't mean I'm going to be able to notch out my little farm. I wouldn't think.
And that's
under the definition, you would be able to do that. For example, let's use the subdivision. I mean, if Fox Run doesn't put sewers in, they're not, or Timberwolf, either one, they are a rural area, period. And they will remain rural forever until they do. So, you're going to have, undoubtedly, some serpentine type of configuration of the town. But there will likely always be rural areas. The rural equestrian area at the southern part of the city will be rural. There is one little piece of it that's going to be served by, it's already in the town, I think, it's already in the town. So that will not be definitely in the town, of course, right? Everything.
Thank you, John.
I don't see, I really, it's fairly clear to me.
Yes, ma'am.
So Royal Run is saying will remain rural because they're served by Whitefield Water and Sewer, but they're keeping it from that time.
Royal Run is served. Royal Run meets every requirement to be part of the town's itself. Contiguous. It's not contiguous.
Yeah.
Well, but they are from
system run by whom?
Doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, see, let me correct a statement I made earlier. I said Royal Run was contiguous from the backside. They are contiguous to Eagle Township from the backside because the front side is Whitestown, but they're not contiguous to the town service area. And that was when you raised your question, I said, gee, I think I was misunderstood or misspoke originally. In other words, you know, the separate example, you know, they are, Royal Run is in Eagle Township. They're not in the municipal area of Whitestown. They are contiguous to Eagle Township because they're connected to the backside of Old Hunt Club area, but they're not contiguous to a town service area. If Old Hunt Club area, the area out past Kissel, became a town service area, then Royal Run would be contiguous to a town service area at that point in time, but that's a long ways out there.
Does it matter what the percentage of contiguity is in the location now is?
No, there's been nothing in our discussion that changed the contiguity requirement, which currently is one-eighth or something like that under annexation laws or something like that. It didn't address. I mean, but there's going to be, I mean, you're going to have some of the same descriptions of development currently. I mean, reorganization doesn't change that. Currently, you're going to have those developments going in where land's being sold to a developer and sewers are being brought in and so on and so forth. And yes, under the current law, some of those would be developed and stayed in the county as opposed to being part of the town. And that's the difference. And we have to try to address it and try to define it the best we can, but I don't know that we can necessarily change how it might happen 5 or 8 years from now, or define every circumstance in 5 or 8 years from now.
Well, but you have.
One of the things,
you don't have sewer and water, not contiguous. You're wrong.
One of the things that has not been vetted out, and I think it's a matter for the town council and their council, as well as the other legislative bodies and their council, to vet out, is that the municipality has the ability to go ahead and furnish a tract on sanitary sewer service lines outside its municipal boundary without that entity being part of the municipal boundary based upon a waiver of annexation. Now the question is, if they furnish that sanitary sewer and there is water, does that automatically become part of the urban area? And it very well could be. Up to this point, they had contractually the ability to go ahead and provide that sanitary sewer, but it not be part of the town, it not be annexed into the town. They would have a waiver of remonstrance against annexation in the future to the extent that annexation would occur on an early basis and get to it, and the town can bring it in without remonstrance. In this particular situation, the town can contract for the sanitary sewer, but what we're hearing is that automatically they're part of the urban district as opposed to the rural district if they have sanitary sewer, except they're not contiguous. So you could have the town run a line, you could have waiver of remonstrance, but they're not in the urban district because they're not contiguous. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work. That legal analysis, it maybe is much to do about nothing, and it'll work itself through with regard to those issues. But it does add another complexity to this that I think the town council will probably take a look at in terms of how they deal with the extension of lines contractually. That
sure.
You don't have somebody being part of the actual town itself until down the road.
And remember Remember the key point, that there are three key points. One is taxation. Second is infrastructure support, because you're changing who is responsible for it. And the third thing is nuisance. The different nuisance issues that come from being in the urban versus rural. And those are the three issues that decision impact. And that's why it's important that this plan address those in detail in a way that is very clear as to what's happening, and especially as we deal with the townships.
It does, in terms of support, if you have A, B, and C, that's where you are, in terms of urban versus rural. And it's not so much in what you add, it's what you keep out. Because what we're hearing from people is, we don't want to be part of the urban district if, in fact, we're not going to get the services, or we don't want to have the services. So it's not so much what you're including, it's what you're allowing to stay out, remain in the rural district, the attached reporting. I think that's what the test that you just enunciated, Joe, gives you,
basically gives you the ability of what isn't part of the urban district, what remains part of the rural district.
Okay, thank you, Mike. We're going on 2 hours now, and we've had all of our reports. What I'd like to suggest too, that the land use and infrastructure committees discuss this a little bit more. The other thing too, I think we all have to keep in mind, both the committee members and the audience, is we're asking questions with our old hats on, okay? And when we're trying to take our old thinking, and I don't mean old in a negative standpoint, we're trying to take our existing thinking and our existing attitudes towards sewer lines and developments and so on, and governments and so on and so forth, and we're trying to answer questions based upon that framework. And we're trying to change the framework of how we're coming together as a community and governing ourselves and recognizing that there's going to be different levels of service and different needs and different costs that we can coexist. We're trying to do it in a fashion whereby we can avoid perhaps the state legislating some form of reorganization that's going to work in all kinds of different areas of the state, or we're trying to avoid some of the fights that some of our neighbors to the east have had and are continuing to have, where monies that were property tax dollars that were meant to provide services are being used to fight neighbors and so on and so forth. And I think that we have an opportunity, if we start thinking about how we're going to come together, we will not be able to answer all the questions that we can think of. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And we'll have to start thinking about some of the questions a little different as well. Any other questions, audience? Any comments that any of the elected officials in the audience would like to make?
I have one question.
Okay. Question from a private citizen.
The referendum language, what's the time frame for getting that on the ballot? When do we have to have that to the clerk's office?
Okay. The governance?
That has to be delivered to the clerk's office in 60 days before the elections, so it can be placed on the ballot. So we've got to put the legislative bodies in a position, and there's even more to it than that, Judith. The legislative bodies have to hold at least one public meeting on this question, so it'll have to be publicly noticed before they would vote on it themselves. So they need a significant window of time to make sure they get their meetings noticed and get the publicity out before they vote. But their decision has to be made, if it is going to be a thumbs up and accept, at least 60 days before the November election, so it can be delivered to the clerk and placed on the ballot.
Isn't that two public meetings?
They have to have, the operative one is a hearing. I mean, they can have as many meetings as they want, but there has to be one public hearing. But they could discuss it at as many meetings as they want.
Would there be one public hearing by each entity, or could all three governmental entities have one public meeting together?
Well, that's a good question. I guess you could do one big one as long as they're all three properly noticed, such that everybody knows that the Union Township meeting may be in this building or somewhere else.
So, I mean, that's obviously their choice.
Yeah, it's their choice to do something jointly, okay, or not.
Thank you. Any other questions? Our next meeting is 2 weeks from tonight, on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock in this same room. And I appreciate everybody attending, and thank you very, very much. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
15 years. Then with growth rates, I used to kick Chuck around a lot. Oh, yeah. I really, yeah, he'll probably tell you really nasty stories. He and Stan
I'll set this over here.